Good morning. Man, it is so good to see you guys this morning. Thank you. Thank you for being a part of this session. I want to thank Larry Klein and also Philip Barnes and those who are part of the Equip Conference Committee for choosing me this year for this slot. I mean, this is very humbling, knowing that there were many, many, many other guys who could have probably done a lot better job than I'm going to do today. And so thank you so much for asking me to be a part of this. I got to tell you, if you missed last night, you missed a treat. David Young brought it. I mean, he is just one of my all-time favorite speakers. Thank you. You didn't know that, did you, David? I mean, dude, you are easily in my top 300. Easily. I mean, really. No, I'm just joking. He is really one of my all-time favorite speakers. That was really a treat for me last night. I'm hoping to be able to catch some of his other sessions as well. But if you missed it, make sure that you get a copy of that. But again, thank you so much for letting me be a part of this as well. I want to begin this morning by telling you a story. It actually took place one dark night outside a small town in Wisconsin. There was a fire that started in a chemical plant. And immediately they sound the alarm for all the different fire departments in the area. And so several of them came rushing in and they began to try and fight this fire back. But it was to no use. The fire just continued to spread and continued to get bigger. And so the chemical plant president came up to the firefighters and said, listen, $50,000 will be donated to any fire department who can get inside the chemical plant and save my secret formula. And so the firefighters, man, they were scrambling, trying to put out this fire, but it was no use. And so more fire departments from the area joined them, and they're fighting this fire. And the chemical plant president again came out, and this time he said $100,000. $100,000 to the fire department that can save my secret formula. And the firefighters are scrambling. They're trying their best to put out this fire, but it continues to grow, and it continues to spread. And then off in the distance, there's a siren. And the siren is coming from a rundown old fire truck that's driven by the Swedish volunteer fire department that's made up of men 65 years and older. And to everyone's amazement, this old fire truck carrying these older men comes flying into the area, passing all of those newer, sleeker fire trucks that are on the outside of the chemical plant. It blows past them and drives right into the center of the chemical plant. And to everyone's amazement, these older gentlemen jump off of this fire truck, and man, from all directions, they're hitting this fire until finally these gentlemen put the fire out. And the chemical plant president was so grateful that he went up to these older gentlemen and he says, I'm donating, because of your courage and your bravery, $200,000 to your fire department. And there were all these reporters that were there that day, and one of the reporters went up to the fire chief, Ole Lawson, 70 years old. And he walks up to him and he says, what are you guys going to do with that $200,000? And he said in frustration, he said, well, he said, the first thing we're going to do is get the brakes fixed on that old fire truck. This weekend, we're going to be looking at the topic restore. Restoration. Now, let me ask you a question this morning. What exactly does that mean? When we talk about restore, when we talk about restoration, I mean, what comes to our mind? For some of you, it may mean the restoration of a car. Anybody in here this morning ever restored a car? Or restored a vehicle? Okay, we've got a few. And the point of that, right, is to try and get that vehicle back to its original state. Right? And so they'll do work on the outside and they'll do work on the inside. And the whole point is to try and get it back to that original condition, the way it used to be, the way it used to look. But you see, here's the deal. Biblical restoration is a little bit different from that. Biblical restoration means to receive back more than has been lost. To the point to where the final state is greater than the original condition. In other words, if you look at the dictionary's version of the word restore, restoration, again, it means to set back into its original state, but biblical restoration means to improve someone beyond measure. In other words, well, let me just ask this. How many sinners do we have in here this morning? All of us, right? We're broken by sin, but when Jesus restores us, He doesn't take us back to our old original state. He doesn't bring us back to that old former way of life. No, He transforms us. He makes us better. Jesus gives us a new life to where we, as Christians, become like Him. Right? 2 Corinthians chapter 5, verse 17. You guys know this passage. Anyone who belongs to who, church? Christ has become a what? A new person, and the old life is cured. The old life is fixed. The old life is gone and a new life has begun. Isn't that awesome? You go to Ephesians chapter 4 verses 21 through 24 and I love this passage. Since you have heard about Jesus and have learned the truth that comes from Him, throw off that old sinful nature and your former way of life, which is corrupted by lust and deception. Instead, let the Spirit renew your thoughts and attitudes. Put on the new nature, created to be like who, church? Like God, and look how much better we become, truly righteous and holy. You see, through the living Word, through Jesus Christ, we are restored, church. We are made better. We are transformed to be like God, truly righteous and truly holy. But do we really believe that? You know, I think so oftentimes we take on the mindset of, you know, before I came to Jesus, I was this old clunker. Covered in the grime and the muck of sin. But then when I came to Jesus, He took me to the car wash and he washed all that muck and that grime away and now I'm a clean old clunker in Christ. No, you're not. You are a new car with a new engine. You have been transformed and restored through Jesus. Somebody better start talking this morning. That's good news. Let me give you some biblical examples of this. Ezekiel chapter 11, verses 19 through 20, and I love this passage. Notice what it says, "Then I will give them one heart, and I will put a what, church? A new spirit within them, and I will take the what? The stony heart out. I'm not going to cure it. I'm not going to fix it. I'm going to give them a new heart, a heart of flesh, and it's going to be better." He says, I'm going to give them a heart of flesh that they may walk in my statutes and keep my judgments and do them, and they shall be my people, and I will be their God. Now let me show you what that looks like. Look with me at Luke chapter 19. I'm going to give you a couple of biblical examples this morning. I'm going to do the best I can to get through this with the time I've got. Luke chapter 19, I just want to show you an example of a guy who at one point was a really bad guy. His name was Zacchaeus. You guys remember hearing or maybe singing the songs when you were little, coming through VBS. Zacchaeus was a wee little man. Well, Zacchaeus was a bad dude. He was a bad guy at one point. It says, Jesus entered Jericho, and as he was passing through, a man was there by the name of Zacchaeus, and he was what, church? He was a chief tax collector, and he was wealthy. Now, here's what you need to understand. Here's why I say that Zacchaeus was a bad dude, okay? In order to be a tax collector, you had to bribe another tax collector. In other words, Zacchaeus was corrupt. But on top of that, in order to be a tax collector, the way you really made your money was to overtax what was owed to the Roman government. And so you might come to the house of a widow, knock on the door, and maybe she owes the government $100. Well, you might walk up to her and say, listen, I'm here to collect your taxes. You owe the Roman government $150. Now, there's no way that she can dispute that. She didn't get a letter in the mail. She can't go to the Roman government website to make sure this is the exact amount. She's at his mercy. And so if he says $150, she pays $150, and he takes 100 of it, and he gives it to the Roman government, and then he takes 50 of it, and he puts it in his pocket. That's how tax collectors did business. But besides that, Zacchaeus was a Jewish man collecting for the Roman government. How could you do that? In other words, Zacchaeus was cheating his own people. He was basically committing treason. In short, he was blessing the Roman government who was oppressing his own people. Are you with me? This guy's a bad guy. He's a sinner. But then to top it all off, he's the boss. The text says that he is the chief tax collector. In other words, not only did he get his own cut, he's getting a cut of all these other tax collectors out here. And that's why the text says, and he was very wealthy. He's a bad guy. I mean, he wouldn't even have been allowed in worship. People would have absolutely hated him because of who he was. And maybe, just maybe, that's what sparked his curiosity to see Jesus. You see, he had wealth, but he didn't have relationships. No one could stand him. And he had wealth, but maybe as one of God's own people, he didn't even like himself. You ever had those feelings? You ever done something wrong? Maybe you said something to someone or did something to someone, and then you're looking in the mirror at yourself and you're thinking, man, how could I do that? How did I get to this point in my life? You know, how did I ever become this way? And many times we think to ourselves, man, I just can't stand you. And maybe Zacchaeus was feeling that way. And so notice verses 3-4, Zacchaeus, it says, wanted to see who Jesus was. But because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. And so Zacchaeus ran ahead and he climbed a sycamore tree to see him since Jesus was coming that way. And so here is Jesus. Jesus is coming into Jericho. Zacchaeus hears about it. And he is really excited about it. But the problem is he's short. Now, a lot of scholars believe that arguably, you know, he may not have been just a regular short person. It may have been he was a little person. But whatever the case may be, we're not sure. He couldn't see over the crowd. And so the text says that he ran and he climbed. You need to underline that or highlight that in your Bible, because this is why it's significant. Respectable, distinguished Jewish men never ran and never climbed. I mean, children, they might climb a tree. Slaves would climb a tree. But not a respectable Jewish man. And you know, children might run, but these distinguished Jewish men wouldn't run because they would wear these flowing robes, and if they ran, their legs would be exposed, and that was undignified. But Zacchaeus was at a point in his life where he didn't care. He had to see Jesus. He desired to see Jesus. And so he ran and he climbed. Let me ask you a question this morning. You ever wonder why? I mean, we read the story, but why did Zacchaeus want to see Jesus? Why was he seeking out Jesus so much? And some of you may be thinking, well, you know, he probably heard about the miracles of Jesus. And you know, he was just kind of curious, you know. He wanted to see if he could really perform these things or if they were, you know, really magic tricks. Maybe. But I think it went deeper than that. Do you think maybe Zacchaeus could have heard about another tax collector by the name of Matthew? Another really bad guy. Another guy who wouldn't have been allowed into the place of worship. Another guy who was hated by the community because he himself was a tax collector. But Jesus loved Matthew. And he befriended Matthew, and he accepted Matthew, and he made him one of his own disciples, and he restored Matthew. He transformed Matthew's life. And maybe Zacchaeus is thinking to himself, maybe that could be me. Maybe Jesus could restore me. And so he is seeking out Jesus. And let me say this, because there may be someone here who needs to hear this today. Let me tell you something. When you seek Jesus, you'll find him. Matthew chapter 7, verses 7 through 8, Jesus himself says, "Ask and it will be given to you." What, church? "Seek and you will" what? "And you will find, knock and it will be open to you, for everyone who asks receives, and the one who" what, church? "Seeks, find." If you seek out Jesus, let me tell you something, you'll find him. He will make himself available to you. In fact, watch this. Verse 5, when Jesus reached the point or reached the spot where Zacchaeus was at, he's up in a tree, he looked up at him and he says, "Zacchaeus," he says, "come down immediately, I must stay at your house today." Now there's something significant here that I want to point out. Did you notice he already knows who Zacchaeus is? Jesus calls him by name. In fact, it kind of reminds me of John chapter 10, verse 14, where Jesus says, "I am the good shepherd. I know my" what? "I know my sheep." Do you realize that Jesus knows you? He knows your name. He knew you as you were in your mother's womb. He knows everything about you. In fact, he knows more about you than you know about yourself. He even knows your past. He knew Zacchaeus' past. But he calls him out. He calls him by name. He calls him Zacchaeus. And if you think about it, I doubt Zacchaeus ever heard his name very much. I'm sure he was called a lot of names, for sure. I mean, people, as he was walking down the street or coming up to take taxes at their house, they were probably calling him jerk or, you know, you traitor. I'm sure he was called a lot of different names, but I doubt he was called Zacchaeus. Because do you know what his name means? Righteous one. Could you imagine he's coming up to your house? Oh, here comes the righteous one to take all our money, kids. I doubt he ever heard his name, but Jesus calls him Zacchaeus, righteous one. And he says, Zacchaeus, I want to spend some time with you. I want to come to your house today. Now imagine if you were in that crowd. There's this large crowd around Jesus. Don't you imagine the people? They are talking among themselves. Are you kidding me? Jesus, do you realize who this guy is? I mean, really? I mean, he is a traitor. He is the worst of the worst. He doesn't even go to church, Jesus. Listen, Jesus, I go to church. I even teach class and I give and I pray. Come to my house, Jesus. But Jesus goes to the worst of the worst and he says, I want to spend some time with you. And the question is, why? Mark 27:17, Jesus says, it's not the healthy who need a doctor, but the who. I have not come to call the righteous, but who? Isn't that awesome? Man, receive that today. Jesus came for people like me and you. He didn't come for the people who had it all together. He didn't come for the righteous. He came for the sinners. He didn't come for those who were well, who were healthy. He came for those who were spiritually sick. He came for me and you. He came for Zacchaeus. And well, the people, this is how they respond. Zacchaeus came down at once and all the people saw this and they began to mutter, he's going to be the guest of a sinner. Now, were they correct? Absolutely. He's the worst of the worst. But Jesus showers him with mercy and grace and love. And it absolutely transforms Zacchaeus' life. I mean, from the time he gets down from the tree to the time he goes with Jesus back to his house, you guys realize he was restored. He was transformed. And some of you need to hear this morning. In the blink of an eye, in a matter of seconds, Jesus can transform and restore your life. Look at what he does for Zacchaeus. Verse 8, Zacchaeus stood up and he said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give what, church? Half of my possessions to the poor. If I've cheated anyone out of anything, I will pay back what, church? Four times the amount. Do you guys understand? This is a guy who worshiped money at one time. This was a guy who didn't think about others. He was completely self-absorbed, and he was such a selfish person. It was all about making a buck. And he encounters Jesus, and now he's generous. Now he's thinking of others, and he's trying to make wrong things right. In fact, look at this. He does more. Remember we talked about when we're restored, we're better, right? He didn't restore us back to the original state. We become better. In fact, he goes beyond and above what the law even requires. According to the law, If you were a Jewish individual, you were to give 10% to the poor. But yet here, Zacchaeus says, I give not 10%, not 20%, but half of my possessions to the poor. And he says, if I've cheated anyone out of anything, if I've stolen anyone from anyone, he says, I'm going to pay back four times. Now, according to the law, if you stole something from someone, you were to return it and you were to pay 20% interest. He says, I'm willing to pay 400% interest. Isn't that awesome? Zacchaeus is restored. Verse 9, Jesus says, today salvation has come to this home because this man too is a son of Abraham. For the Son of Man, speaking of himself, came to what, church? To seek and to save the lost. Praise God. Let me tell you another story real quick. This time we're going to be in Luke chapter 22. I don't have time to read all of this, but I'll break it down for you. Jesus is getting ready to be arrested. And he's getting ready to be taken and unfairly tried and crucified. He's going to die on a cross. But before he does that, he gathers his disciples together and he says, listen, guys. He says, before this night is over, you're all going to fall away because of me. And Peter, when he hears this, because of his love for Jesus, he says, Lord, there's no way. Even if all these other guys do, Lord, not me. Oh, not me. I've got your back. And Jesus says, Peter, before the rooster crows tonight, you're going to deny me three times. And he says, no way, Lord. I would never deny you. But then they come and they arrest Jesus. And Peter is following from a distance and they take him to the home of the high priest. And Peter follows and he goes out into the courtyard of the high priest. And he's out there with the servants warming himself. And notice what happens, 55 through 56. A servant girl saw Peter seated there in the firelight. And she looked closely at him and said, this man was with him, but he denied it. I don't know him. A little later, someone else said to him, you are also one of them. And he said, no, I'm not. And then verse 59, about an hour later, another asserted, certainly this man was with him, for he is a Galilean. And Peter replied, man, I don't know what you're talking about. Now, if you look at Matthew's account, Matthew reports on this very event, but he records that after he denies Jesus that third time, he finalizes it by saying, if I am lying, may I be accursed. In other words, if I am lying to you, may I go to hell. That's how seriously he denied knowing Jesus. And then as he said that, verses 60 through 62, just as he was speaking, the rooster crowed, and the Lord, and you have to remember, the Lord has been beaten at this point. His face is probably all bloodied. And it says the Lord turned and looked straight at Peter. Can you imagine? Then Peter remembered the word that the Lord had spoken to him before the rooster crows today. You will disown me three times. And Peter went outside and he just wept bitterly. Have you ever done that? You ever come face to face with your sin, realize what you had done? Not because you got caught, but because you realized what you had done. You had let the Lord down and you just, man, you wept. It broke your heart. I'm so sorry, God. And at this point, Peter feels like a failure. And he feels like he is unfit to do what God has called him to do. And so he says, you know what? I'm going back to what I was ever good at, and that's fishing. And so Jesus has died. He's been buried. And then he raises from the grave. And Peter is out in this boat, and he's fishing. He's in the fishing business again. But he looks on the bank, and there's Jesus. the risen Christ, and he jumps in the water, and he goes to the shore, and there's this encounter. John chapter 21, I don't have to read it. You guys, read it. John chapter 21, they're face to face, and Jesus looks at Peter. And it's this powerful moment of restoration. He looks at Peter, and he asks him three times. He says, Peter, do you love me? And what's interesting about that is, how many times did Peter deny Jesus? Three times. Three times he asked Peter, do you love me? And Peter says, Lord, you know I love you. He says, and feed my sheep. It's this moment where Jesus is forgiving and restoring Peter. And he's telling Peter, Peter, listen, you failed, but let me tell you something. I've still got a purpose and I've still got a plan for you. And he restores Peter. In fact, think about this. Who was it that delivered the message there on the day of Pentecost to the very people who crucified Jesus? It was Peter. Jesus had taken him and he had transformed him and he had restored him and he had made him better. In fact, Peter never denied Jesus ever again. In fact, according to tradition, they say that Peter was martyred for the cause of Christ and they were going to crucify him on the cross, but Peter says, I'm unworthy, crucify me upside down. In other words, he was willing to die for Jesus. And I tell you those stories to tell you this, that Jesus can restore your life. If you're not a Christian here this afternoon, Jesus can restore you. He can transform you. He can make you like him. And if you ever wonder what Jesus is like, look at Galatians chapter 5, 22 through 23. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, all those things that we desire, all those things that we want to be, that's who Jesus is. And Jesus says, you come to me and I'll make you that. I'll transform you into that. And for those of you who are Christians, believe it, you have been restored. Don't just receive it, live it out. Live like you are a restored people, that God has changed your life. And when we live like Jesus, we are a powerful testimony to the awesomeness of Jesus in this world. What I want to do in closing today is I just want to share with you something that our congregation put together at Central. Jeff Campbell was the instrument in putting this video together. I want to give him credit for that. What I wanted to do today was to just bring some of our members up here and let them hold up some signs of who they once were, and then flip it over and let them share with you who they are now because of Jesus and how he has restored their life. But many of them couldn't be here today, and so we put together this video. And so I'll leave this with you today in closing, and I just want to thank you so much for letting me be here today. I hope you're encouraged.